Welcome to The Romantic Side of Suspense with Sarah Hemmerker. In each episode, she'll talk with your favorite romantic suspense authors. They will take you behind the scenes of the writing process, giving excerpts from their writing, and share stories about their writing life.
Natchez Standoff by Patricia Bradley. The Natchez Trace National Parkway stretches 444 miles from Nashville to Natchez, the oldest town on the Mississippi River. It's the perfect road for a relaxed pleasure drive. Unfortunately for park ranger Luke Faraday, lately it's being used to move drugs. Sent to Natchez to infiltrate the organization at the center of the drug ring, Luke arrives too late to a stakeout and discovers the body of his friend, park ranger John Danvers. John's daughter Brooke is determined to investigate her father's murder, but things are more complicated than they first appear, and Brooke soon finds herself the target of a killer who will do anything to silence her. Luke will have his hands full keeping her safe, but who's going to keep him safe when he realizes he's falling, hard, for the daughter of the man he failed to save?
Hi, and welcome to this episode of The Romantic Side of Suspense. I'm your host, Sarah Hemmerker, and I'm so glad you joined me. Today I have with me Patricia Bradley. She is, we were just talking earlier, she's written 11 books since 2013. I'm kind of amazed at that. She's was a Carol finalist. She's won the Inspirational Reader's Choice Award in suspense. She lives in North Mississippi with her rescue kitty and another new arrival. Is that also a cat?
Yes, it is.
Tux?
And Susie does not like him.
Yeah.
She wants it gone.
Yes, that's usually, I have three cats of my own. That's usually the case. Sometimes they don't like the new ones. So we're I'm thrilled to have you on the show. So thanks for joining me, Patricia.
Thank you. I'm looking forward to this.
So now, do your cats, I actually had a lock, one of my cats, the only female of the three, out of my office so I could do this podcast because she will just meow all the time. So are your cats noisy? Do they bother you when you write?
They don't speak. I have very seldom do they make any noise at all. The male cat, if another cat comes around, because we have a lot of cats in the neighborhood, he will growl, but I've never heard him meow. He'll purr, and the female cat occasionally will mew, but neither one of them have ever meowed very much, and so it was surprising to me.
Well, you're lucky, though.
Now, Susie, half the time I'm writing with her in my lap. And so that pushes the keyboard away and my back kills me.
It's
kind of hard to make get down.
I know. One of my cat, he'll jump, especially, you know, in the winter, he'll jump on my lap. And it just pushes me far enough away from my keyboard that you're right. You have that little, I can still read, but a little extra stretch. And after about 10 minutes, I'm like, I'm done. I can't take it.
Absolutely.
Even though I love having them on my lap because they're just so warm and cozy. So
that's the only time she'll get in my lap.
Is when
if
you're
I
writing.
Wanted to. Right, yep. As I'm writing or on the phone. I'm surprised that she's not already in my lap. If the phone rings, within 2 minutes, she's in my lap. It's like a kid, you're not paying attention to me now.
Yeah, so I'm impressed with your cat that you've been able to write so much. So do you have a secret? Do you have a how have you written so many books in so short a time?
It's called Big Bottom and Seat, the Seat at Bottom and Fair. I don't know. God has given me the stories, and I'm very disciplined. Life happens, and I usually find the last 3 months before the deadline of working 8 and 10 hour days, especially the last month. That's what happened because life happens, and I have the best intentions. Right now, I'm saying I will not be in this position like I was. I turned in a book Monday, and I'm not kidding. I was working from 5 o'clock in the morning till 10 o'clock at night to get it finished because I had some family emergencies in August that took 2 months out of my writing time. So.
Yeah.
But I keep telling myself, I'm not going to do this again. And guess what?
You're already
behind. I find
behind.
Myself there. Yeah. So I'm right now, I'm already thinking about, I have a book that'll be due to Revell in November. So I'm already putting it together in my head before I start writing.
Okay, so are you kind of a plotter? Do you kind of plot out your books, or do you just, are you a panster? Are you a combination of the two?
When I started out, I had an outline and all this. And about 3 books ago, I couldn't come up with an outline. I had to start writing to figure the book out. But the main thing, what I do is I find out as much about my characters as I can before I start writing. Sometimes you have to write about them before they'll talk to you.
Yes.
So you have to start writing them. But most of the time, now the last 2 or 3 books have been based on characters that I figure out. I know what the crime is. Mm-hmm. And so then I get to know the characters and what they will do and what they won't do. And if I try to make them do something they don't want to do, then they don't talk to me.
Yes.
And I have to go back up.
I'm familiar with that. I'm wrestling with a couple right now with, I'm like, oh, okay. And then I realize, oh yeah, that was totally wrong. So now that I kind of corrected that, the story is flowing. They do. Yeah, they will. It's like, although I read an article recently, as someone had posted, I can't remember, you know, you get these articles in the ether from the internet, somewhere in the internet, about how that not everyone has these character conversations in their head. I mean, I used to think that everyone had, you know, stories going on in their head.
I didn't know they didn't either. How in the world do they write?
Well, I don't know if they write or not. I'm just saying it's normal people, you know, had no
character. I don't think normal people have these other people living in their
head. No, I don't think so. But I used to think that when I was a kid, I used to think that. I was like, oh, everyone makes up stories. And then I found out, no, not everyone. Not everyone does.
I didn't start writing till I was 35, and I couldn't sleep at night. And one night when I couldn't sleep, this man appeared in my vision, and he was standing at a window, and I could see the smokestacks behind him. And he turned to me and he said, "This isn't the way my life was supposed to turn out." Mm. And so I began to tell myself stories, and that was the very beginning of me telling stories. I'd always been a reader, but had never thought about being a writer until that man came to live in my head. And then all these other people came to live in my head.
And so you have to get them out of your head, right? On the paper. Yes. I mean, that's...
Yes, put them on paper before they leave you alone.
Yes, exactly. So how many stories do you feel like you kind of carry around with you at a time?
I mostly one at a time. I wish I could write 2 stories, like write in the morning this story and write in the afternoon. But I've tried that, and it just simply doesn't work. So I write 1 story at a time.
Yes, I tend to. It's hard for me to double focus like that.
I'm envious of people who can, but I'm not envious, but I wish I could. I'm glad they can. I wish I could.
Yeah, but I will say that sometimes I have other ideas for other stories that pop in my head, and I find I
start to write them down.
Yeah, write them down, and then I can return to to my work in progress, because otherwise I feel like I'll forget.
Most of the time when I'm working on a story, a character from that book, I know it'll come to me that this character will be in the next book. And so I'll be kind of, in the back of my mind, I'll kind of think about what the story would be. But that didn't happen with this book. This one was totally, the one I just turned in, totally. I didn't get me a character, so I got to find me one.
Oh, yeah. So do you always write with a series, or do you have like standalone books? What's your...
These are standalone. They're series in that they are set in the same place.
Okay.
This one is set on the Natchez Trace down around Natchez.
Mm-hmm.
And it's park rangers, and there are 2 different kinds of park rangers. There's the interpretive, and then there's the law enforcement, and there's one of each in the books.
Okay.
So, and then that's the key. And then my other series, the Logan Point, the key thing was the area, the town of Logan Point. And then the Memphis Cold Case books were all cold case, not fictional cold case, just set in Memphis.
Okay.
So, but they're all standalone. You can read them out of order. The first series, not so much, because if I had known what I was doing back then, I would have written book one and three and then two and four.
Mm-hmm.
So, because they are, I mean, you can read them. They have the story lines are totally wrapped up. And I usually just take a character from one book and put them in another book.
Right, right. Like a secondary character right. of some sort.
Yeah, secondary character becomes the main character
right.
of the next.
So it sounds like, you know, you have a lot of yours set in Tennessee and
Mississippi mostly.
Is that because that's where I noticed you live in North Mississippi. Is that what you're familiar yeah. with or?
Well, I wasn't familiar with Natchez. I've been down there several times. That's in South Mississippi.
Mm-hmm.
And I love it down there. I think I would move there in a heartbeat. And then my next series after this series is going to be set near the coast. So I like to set it in this area because it's so rich with murder and stuff.
I don't know if that's a good tourist selling point, Patricia.
No, I think not.
Come to Mississippi where there's a lot of murder. And
where you may have to run for your life.
Yes.
I also grew up in Memphis, and that's one reason okay. that I set a book there, my series there. And I had ready help because I knew I had a contact on the Memphis Police Department, actually in the cold case unit.
Oh, that's helpful.
He was the cold case unit.
Yeah. That's often I find that's the case, right? You know, there's usually only one or two people who do the cold cases. So how do you develop your contacts then in law enforcement? Just people you've known? This is always curious to me, you know, how people
This one
find
I called the Memphis Police Department and asked for homicide and told them I was writing a book and I needed. No, that was another time. I just called and asked, and they put me in touch with their PR people, mm-hmm. and he met me, and then he took me and introduced me to the cold case guy, and we've actually become friends since then.
Oh, that's nice. So, do they like your books?
They do. I always like to portray the police in general as positive.
Mm-hmm.
And there might be a bad one in the bunch, you know, sometimes there is, but most of the time I'm not negative toward them.
Right. Right. Yeah. Yeah. Well, I can see why that would be helpful for
especially if you're wanting them to be your contact person.
Right, right. Hey, come read this book where I bash police like all the time. Yeah, sure. This will make everyone feel good. Yeah, because I'm sure it's a tough job, you know. So
it is, and I don't make them the redneck sheriff. I rarely ever have anybody like that.
Mm.
Because I mean, I know too many policemen here in Mississippi. I know too many, and they're not, they're very professional.
Right.
And, you know, and they've been to the academy, and it's not like it used to be. Now, I have known some redneck sheriffs in the past.
Wow.
Who
yeah.
were bullies.
Yes.
So, but I try not to portray any of my law enforcement because they have enough negative publicity as it is. So.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I think a lot of them, you know, are probably heroes in your book and you know.
Yeah, they are my heroes.
They are your heroes, right? So, yeah, because your law, I've read a few of your books, Patricia, and your law, mostly you do have the law enforcement as the hero or the heroine in your books.
Yeah, I like to do that. We have enough other villains we can pull from.
Yes. That is so true. I prefer the kind of the ordinary person.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of like them kind of being sucked into, but that's just the way I like to write some of my books. So it's, I always find it fascinating how you pick, you know, professions for your characters. So do you have?
I always wanted to be a park ranger.
Okay. So now you get to pretend like you're one, right?
That's true. And one of the one of them, I can't remember anymore. She would climb rocks. She was a rock climber. I've always wanted to do that. So I did it through that.
Yeah, my family and I went to, we're camping in West Virginia, and we went rock climbing there, and it was a lot harder. I mean, I knew it would be hard, but I have, like, no upper body strength. I'll just be honest here. And I was like, oh, this is not going to go work well.
This is not going to look pretty.
No. I was just glad because I have 4 kids. So with the 6 of us, we made our own like group. So it was just like us and the guide, which was fantastic. Yeah. So nobody else could see my, you know, pathetic attempts to climb the rock. So
I know what you mean. Yeah. I keep saying I go on a cruise with my agency a lot of times and they have this rock climbing wall. And I keep saying I'm going to climb it. I have yet to do it, but I keep saying it.
It is kind of fun. I like the rappelling down. That was a lot of fun.
That would be the best part.
Yeah, so I managed to get up a little far enough that I could rappel a little bit down. But there's no way I was making it to the top, of that really short. And everyone else is like, come on, Mom. I'm like, no, I can't do it. So I might have to have a rock climber in one of my books just because, so I can vicariously, you know.
Absolutely.
Well, we are almost out of time, Patricia. Oh. Is there anything else that you want to talk about? And I know that our readers can hear more about Standoff, which is coming out in May. But is there anything else about your writing that you'd like to share before we end our podcast today?
Oh, goodness, no. Just that it's awfully hard work. But it's very rewarding. There's no high quite like when you're in the zone and you're writing. And the words are coming. There's nothing quite like it, I don't think.
Yeah, I agree. It is, and it's just something so satisfying of knowing that when you finally have that book out and knowing that someone else is going to read it, and you just hope that they like it. You know, they hope that you and they enjoy the characters as much as I've enjoyed them, because I really do. You know, I'm always sad to say goodbye to them.
I know it. I know. That's hard to do.
Yes. Well, thank you for being my guest today, Patricia.
Thank you so much. I really enjoyed this.
You've been listening to The Romantic Side of Suspense. I'm your host, Sarah Hammerker, and I've been talking to Patricia Bradley. She's a Carroll finalist and the winner of an Inspirational Reader's Choice Award in Suspense. She's written 11 books. Her newest one is Standoff, which is out in May. So you can find out more about that and links to connect with her with this podcast. So I hope you join me next time.
Now an excerpt from Natchez Standoff by Patricia Bradley. New Orleans, Louisiana. What had he gotten himself into? Brandon Marlar leaned back in his chair and chewed his thumbnail. His dad had warned him the last time he caught him hacking.
Son, breaking into someone's files you have no business being in is wrong, and it's going to get you in trouble. Just don't come crying to me when it does.
But hacking was as addictive as the heroin he'd been hooked on 2 years ago, and when he'd found an open port in the Boudreaux Enterprises system, Brandon couldn't help himself, not after he cracked the password in less than 2 minutes. Didn't make it right, though. Brandon jiggled his legs, hesitating as the keyboard lured him. Now that he'd found one secret file, he might as well go all in. Sucking in a breath, he hunched over the computer again, his fingers flying across the keys as he unlocked another file. A spreadsheet popped up on the screen, listing banks he'd never seen in his job as bookkeeper for Justin Boudreaux. He straightened his back and massaged his tight muscles. Just to make sure his assumptions were correct, he copied a number in one of the columns and opened Google. Sure enough, the search engine returned hits for Fidelity Trust in the Cayman Islands. He repeated his search with numbers from another row. Another financial institution, this one in Switzerland. He totaled the accounts. At least 30. Brandon pulled up another file that listed dates, locations, and deposits. When he brought up both files side by side on his screen, it all clicked into place. He was looking at a classic case of money laundering. The company he worked for was blending funds and then depositing the laundered money in offshore accounts. Brandon drew in a shaky breath.
Oh, boy. Maybe all of this was legitimate. And maybe the Golden Gate Bridge was for sale. Justin Boudreau was a powerful man. Even with these files, who would believe a 22-year-old ex-heroin junkie? And if, he mentally erased the if, when Boudreau discovered he'd hacked into the company's computer system, Brandon didn't want to think what might happen. His dad. He'd take the information to him, and he would know what to do. Brandon removed the flash drive and shut down his computer. He could be in Natchez in 3 hours. Natchez, Mississippi, 4 weeks later. Brooke Danvers checked her watch. Her dad had said 6, and it was almost that. She quickly twisted her hair into a ponytail and then buckled her Sig Sauer to her waist. While she hadn't been sworn in as a law enforcement ranger yet, Mississippi was an open carry state, and her dad had okayed her wearing it. She hadn't stopped smiling since he'd asked if she wanted to ride along with him tonight. It didn't even bother her that he'd chosen Sunday night, because there wouldn't be many cars out and about. Brooke glanced toward the flat-brimmed hat that she'd worn all day at Melrose, the almost 200-year-old mansion where she'd led tours. At times, it felt as though the August heat and humidity would cook her head. She wouldn't need the hat tonight, though, and left it sitting on her childhood bed. Returning home after 15 years while contractors finished the remodel on her water-damaged apartment was proving to be an experience. She'd always heard grown children shouldn't return to the nest, and now she knew why. At her place, she came and went as she pleased without anyone asking questions. But now, it was almost like she'd stepped back into her teenaged years. Not that she wasn't thankful her parents had offered to let her move into her old room, but it would be good to get back into her own apartment in a couple of weeks. The chimes from the grandfather clock sent her hurrying down the hall to her dad's home office. It was empty. He said he'd had work to do before they left. She quickly walked to her mom's studio. "Where's Dad?" she asked. Her mom turned from her easel. "He got a call and left. Said to tell you if you still wanted to do the ride-along, text Gary to pick you up." Disappointment was swift, and Brooke ground her teeth to keep from letting it show. "He said something about you riding with him tomorrow night." That brightened her mood slightly. Her phone dinged with a text. Gary, the retiring ranger she was replacing. "Are you riding with me?" She quickly texted him. "Yes, what time?" "Give me an hour and I'll pick you up." She sent him a thumbs-up emoji and hooked her phone on her belt. "Come see what I'm working on," her mom said. Brooke edged into the room. It wasn't often she got a chance to see an unfinished work by her mother. The painting was of her very pregnant sister. "Oh, wow," she said. "That's beautiful. She'll love it." "I hope so. Megan's feeling kind of fat." "That's what she told me the other day," Brooke said. "I tried to tell her that wasn't true, and maybe this will show her." "Oh, I'm glad you like it. I should have it finished in time to take with the others to Knoxville next month." The baby's due date was a couple of months away, just after her mom's gallery showing of her work ended. They both turned as the doorbell rang. It couldn't be Gary already, and besides, he would just honk. "I'll get it," Brooke said, and hurried to open the front door. "Jeremy?" she said, her stomach fluttering at the sight of one of Natchez's most eligible bachelors. Had she forgotten a date? He looked behind him, then turned back to Brooke with laughter in his eyes. "I think so." Heat flushed to her face, and it had more to do with the broad shoulders and lean body of the man on her doorstep rather than the temperature.
"I wasn't expecting you. I don't have a lot of time, but do you want to come in?"
"Since it's a little hot and humid out here, coming in would be good," he teased. "And I apologize for dropping by without calling, but I was afraid you'd tell me you were busy."
Thanks for listening to The Romantic Side of Suspense with Sarah Hammerker. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave a review. You can sign up to receive notifications of upcoming podcasts and listen to previous editions at sarahhammackerfiction.com.